Cause number 18377, CV Angela Davis as president of NEA Dallas versus Mike Marath and Dallas Independent School District.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. Gianna Ortiz for appellant Angela Davis of NEA Dallas Local Board of PSDA.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. Catherine Long, Owen Middleman, and Carlos Lopez for Dallas Independent School District.
Okay. And how many people are arguing on this?
One for Dallas Independent School District and one for the commission.
Okay. Thank you. So as you know that, please be seated. You each have 20 minutes to go ahead and make your arguments. I'm assuming that you've also divided up your time and let the timekeeper know that. I'll try and keep an eye on it, but when the lights here get to yellow, you'll have 2 minutes left in your presentation, same as with y'all. For the audience, welcome to the Third Court of Appeals. Please turn all cell phones or other devices that could make noise or distract from the attorneys in this case, if you could turn them off or at least on silent. We would greatly appreciate that. And for those of you that are new to the court, we have electronic recordings of the proceedings. They will be available on the court's website in a few days, and so these microphones are for that purpose. They're not to amplify, so good luck to you for those of you in the back. And I think with that, we can go ahead and get started whenever you're ready, ma'am.
Thank you, Justice Goodman, and may it please the court. My name is Gianna Ortiz, and I'm privileged to be here representing Angela Davis and the other 80-some-odd members of NEA Dallas, the local affiliate of Texas State Teachers Association in Dallas. We are here today, Your Honors, because Dallas ISD has instituted an unfair evaluation system. In delivering to the teachers untimely final evaluations, the district has violated for them fundamental rules and law of teacher appraisal. The commissioner has erred in dismissing this case for lack of jurisdiction or for our failure to exhaust administrative remedies. I hope to talk to you today about the merits of this matter and why this case is important. I then hope to address some of the procedural arguments that have been raised by both Dallas ISD and the Commissioner of Education at reasons why we are unable to file a grievance and why we are unable to make this appeal to you today. Beginning first, Your Honors, with the merits of this case. This is a straightforward appraisal grievance. We are privileged to represent educators all over the state of Texas. Appraisal grievances are not uncommon. We make our living counseling clients about appraisals, making rebuttals, requesting second appraisals, and where necessary, filing grievances to contest unlawful violations within summative appraisals. Each and every time we do that according to the district's grievance policy. Most school districts give teachers 15 days in which to file a grievance. Dallas, in this case, gives teachers 10 days. There are two unusual things about this appraisal grievance. First, this is the first of its kind. Dallas ISD in 2014-15 instituted a new appraisal system, a locally adopted appraisal system. It departed from the commissioner's standard appraisal system, which was known at that time as PDOS, and created a new appraisal model. The teachers received their very first scorecard final appraisals under that system in September of 2015 and filed their grievances thereafter.
And when you say it's one of the kind, was it the first time that a local school district had done this, or it was just the first time that Dallas had done this?
This was the first time that Dallas had done a locally adopted appraisal system, and this was the first scorecard received, and so what ours is one of the very first grievances regarding a scorecard.
Correct, but and maybe you didn't mention it, and maybe it's immaterial. Are there other local systems or local policies that are like this?
Correct, yes. The teachers are not disputing the adoption of a local policy. Law provides
that Dallas... Because it says you can do one or the other. You can do ours or you can do your own.
And there are others. before this one.
That's right. Well, and in fact, I'm not aware of others specifically, but I am aware of others right now as we sit here who are currently using their own appraisal systems, which are closer to the commissioner's adopted system. But yes, there are other districts that do this.
And were there challenges to the adoption of those other systems? Are you aware of any?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay.
Not that I'm aware of. The difference in my experience with other locally adopted systems and this system is that they track T-tests. The commissioners, what was known as PDOS is now called T-test. And so other locally adopted systems use the T-test model for the most part. And the most important part of T-test that they will use is the annual appraisal within the school year appraised. Those of us who are familiar with teachers know that every spring teachers will receive a final evaluation. That's typical. It's usually called a summative. That was called a summative under PDOS. I think it's called the same thing under T-test. The difference between other locally adopted systems and the T-test and Dallas's system, which they started in 2015 and continues today, is that they give that final appraisal in the fall of the next school year.
Do any of the other local policies do a scorecard like the TEI does?
I am not aware of any. I am not aware of any districts who give a teacher a final appraisal outside the school year appraised.
And why can't you argue that the scorecard is not actually the evaluation, that the evaluation happens during the school year when they have their
summative?
And so Dallas ISD uses that term summative for a teacher performance component appraisal that occurs in the spring. That document is not a final appraisal as appraisal is defined in the law. We see in 21.351 that appraisal must require two components, and that is not only teacher appraisal but student performance. And that summative appraisal in Dallas is, on its face, teacher performance. Dallas ISD yesterday filed some exhibits. One of them is the teacher performance rubric used in evaluating teachers in that summative evaluation. And you can see there that on its face, and when you look through all of the domains that are rated in that teacher performance evaluation, that they entirely deal with the teacher's performance. And that is how the system is designed. If we zoom in on the system, we learn that the system has three components. The teacher performance component, and the summative is that part of the score. The second component is student surveys, and the third is the student achievement, student performance. So those two requirements that the law requires appraisal to contain are never given to the teacher until the fall of the following school year in the scorecard. And so while they have some information in the summative, it is virtually meaningless to the teacher without that final appraisal scorecard.
I thought that the teachers had two of the elements before the end of the year, that the only thing that they were waiting for was the achievement scores that come out in the summer.
That is correct. So of those three components that Dallas ISD uses, only two of them are required under the law. That is teacher performance and student performance. They have a third component that is delivered to the teachers in a raw score form during the school year, and that is like student surveys, and that's its own animal. It's not provided for under the law. So that's for purposes of our discussion and deciding whether the summative is or should be considered a final appraisal, we look at the other two components, one of which is delivered in the school year, but the other of which is not.
So the performance of teachers' students, the second part that's required, that's not delivered to them until the end, until September?
Until September, that is correct.
Because?
The reason the district has said is because they do not have student score information until the summertime. So there are two points that I'd like to make about that counterargument. One is that the T-test, the PDOS, and other districts are able to assess student performance within the same school year. It can be done. I think that the T-test model for doing that is in flux, but in any case, the other districts are doing that within the school year, consistent with the requirements of 21.352. The The second component of that is that if you look at the district's exhibits that they filed yesterday, one of the exhibits is not the attorney-created timeline, but it looks like a page out of the guidebook, which has timelines and dates for when things occur. And in that timeline, which is their exhibit 2, you can see that the third from the bottom block is called assessments. And that is referring to the student performance component. And what you see there is that it says assessments are administered and scored. And when does that occur according to the district? That occurs in December and March and June of 2015. Now, most of these teachers' contracts expired in June of 2015, right? And for the most part, all of our members were renewed, so they were coming back the next year. But there's no excuse for the district to have held that information when it says that it had it during our contract year until the following school year. So we believe that the district's own exhibits support that they had the information, it just wasn't shared with us.
So did any of the teachers rebut their summative appraisals?
I believe that some of them did. Yes, the district provided a portal where some of them were able to submit rebuttals.
Okay. Were they able to file grievances on those?
So that is an interesting question because anecdotally, our clients were told by their principals, wait, don't grieve yet. It's not done. You don't know how you're going to do in the other two components.
Do we have any evidence of that?
We did argue that in the grievance hearing. So there is evidence in the record, and that's in our petition for review as well.
So that kind of gets me to the question that we're not really talking about that we need to, and that is the appropriate standard of review. My understanding is that you're asserting a de novo standard of review is what we should be looking at.
Correct. Questions of subject matter jurisdiction, I believe, are reviewed under de novo standard of review.
But
what do we do with the Solis decision?
I think that the Solis decision requires the commissioner to exercise jurisdiction. He cannot narrow his jurisdiction as if he is an appellate court. We brought the very same claims to the commissioner that we brought to the
Failure to comply with the timing is not a jurisdictional complaint under Solis, shouldn't we be reviewing that? I mean, is the de novo review the appropriate standard of review in that instance?
We believe that it is, because not only has he denied or dismissed our grievance on the appeal of the board vote, but we've also asked him to determine as a matter of law whether these aspects violate the education code, and his dismissal of those claims should be reviewed by this court on a de novo standard of review. Furthermore, these claims were not ripe until we received the core scorecards. In other words, no teachers had been harmed prior to receiving the scorecards. A teacher is permitted under the board policy and state law to file a grievance over any condition of employment. Here, the district's board policy says you must file when there's a decision or an action. There was no decision or action prior to receipt of the scorecards.
And so the findings of fact and conclusions of law that are in the decision, are we bound by them? I mean, what do we do with them?
We believe that you can interpret the commissioner's jurisdiction and your own jurisdiction de novo as a matter of law. It is their legal questions, ripeness,
but the question
exhaustion.
I think is, if we were to agree that that the commissioner does have jurisdiction, then does the standard of review does not go back to is there substantial evidence to
support
look at
the findings and conclusions that the commissioner entered? Sorry, I interrupted. I'm sorry.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah. Sorry.
A question of jurisdiction is reviewed de novo, and what he has determined is lack of jurisdiction for failure to timely comply. So I do not believe that should be entitled to a substantial evidence review.
Let's assume we agree with you, and let's say yes, he had jurisdiction, because what we have here, we don't have a straight out dismissal. We don't have a sorry, untimely dismiss. We think it's untimely, we're dismissing. However, here are the findings of facts and conclusions of law that go to the merits. Mm-hmm. And my question, and I think Justice Goodwin's question is, if we find that the commissioner does have jurisdiction under Solis, then the question, doesn't our review of his findings of facts and conclusions of law as to the timeliness, not for jurisdictional, but just whether it was timely or not, why would that not be under substantial evidence?
Even if it is under substantial evidence, which I believe that it's a question of law that you can review de novo, but even if it is, I believe that Solis held that we need not have had a board hearing on the issue of the simple violations, or the straightforward violations, rather, of law that have been asserted in this case. And so not only did we appeal the board's vote, which if this court is reviewing that under substantial evidence, or the commissioner is, but we have also asked the commissioner to review whether the violations of law occurred, independent of the board vote, which is what Dr. Solis did in her grievance appeal. She argued to the school board non-extension of her contract. She reframed her arguments to the commissioner, arguing that the school district had not followed its non-renewal process, or the law's non-renewal process. And this court held that the commissioner must make a decision on that, because he is not a court of law. He is the commissioner of education, and the appeal to him is exhaustion of administrative remedies. And so because we have appealed not only the board's vote, but also the violations of law that occurred independent of the board vote, we believe that he must exercise jurisdiction and make a determination as to the merits of those claims. And he did not address merits in his decision. The only merits he addressed were for the limited issue of compensation. But when you look at his decision in 21352, that doesn't appear, because he did not address our request for a review of the violations of law.
Can I ask another question? I know you're close to ending this time. So my understanding, two questions. One is, Ms. Davis was actually involved in when they were drafting the policy. Is that correct?
I think the district has presented some evidence that she attended a meeting. It was a years-long process, so I think she attended maybe a meeting.
So irrespective of that, if the complaint is that this wasn't done within the school year, at the time that the policy was adopted, one, was there not notice that there's no way it could have been done within a year? And two, definitely after May was done, it was clear to the teachers that they were not getting their performance of teachers' students. Wouldn't that begin the timeline, the 10-day deadline to file a grievance?
That timeline, if it occurred at that time, which I do not believe that it did, because they had not received full appraisals, but I understand you're saying that's the point.
Right.
That's the point, right. But when they received an appraisal in the following school year that purported to tell them their performance for the prior year, when they were bound by contract to stay there at the district, that was a harm that triggered the right to file their grievance.
So what is the harm that you're alleging again?
The harm is violation of law, not having the benefit of the development, which is what the legislators clearly intend in this section of the statute. And also, teachers, when they receive their appraisals in the spring, they can make a determination. Am I valued here? Do we fit?
What substantial right has been affected by the timing of this, and by
the right to an appraisal that comports with the law?
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Davis.
Thank you.
One moment, please.
May it please the court. I wanted to start by discussing the standard of review, since you inquired about that. In Houston ISD versus Simpson, this court answered that question with respect to jurisdictional issues, both from the fact findings of fact standpoint and the legal review standpoint. And while the legal decision with respect to jurisdiction is reviewed de novo, the factual findings are actually reviewed under the substantial evidence standard. And in this case, since it hinges on timeliness, those would be the commissioner's findings of fact number 5 through 7 regarding whether the overall grievance was timely, whether the individualized challenges were timely, and he found that they were not. And there is substantial evidence in the record to support the commissioner's decisions for those factual findings, which are the predicate for the legal determination that their grievance was untimely. He held it was jurisdictional. Even if this court under Solis finds that it is not jurisdictional, then there are issues regarding waiver and failure to preserve, which is another reason to support the commissioner's decision.
But let me ask you about that. Because he found that it was timely, he just, as a finding of fact, he doesn't even tell us what day. Usually when we're dealing with timelines, we have timeline starts on this date, that's when it accrues, and so we don't even have that in his findings of facts. When is it that the district says that the 10 days started running?
Well, because of the nature of the challenge, which was so voluminous, and they had a, kind of a roving target about what challenges were, especially when at the level two grievance, they decided to write individualized challenges of 82 people for the first time, as opposed to an overall challenge to the system. But if you look at their actual grievance, especially the relief they're requesting in their grievance, this was a challenge about the TEI system and the TEI policy. And on May 1st, 2014, the guidebook, which are the TEI guidelines, was issued. With the guidelines and the presentation, the board adopted DNA Local on May 22nd, 2014. The May 2014 guidebook and the DNA Local, the adoption of that with DNA regulation, provided them all the information that they needed to know regarding the TEI system to be able to lodge any challenge to the district's teacher evaluation system.
So are you suggesting that they can never, that a teacher who is like hired today can never address the claim that this TEI system does not comport with the state statute? They can never raise that.
I am not making that argument. I'm arguing that these grievances with this challenge under the factual record that they've established and what is there cannot, because they were teachers at the time that the policy was adopted. They started the teaching year under this system. They knew it was going to apply to them the whole year. And as a result, they knew or should have known of the decisions or action of the board to file a grievance. I am not saying that no teacher could ever come into Dallas ISD and make that challenge.
Well, how would a new teacher do it? They would be hired and 10 days later file it?
They could learn. If they believe that there were certain part of the system is unlawful, a new teacher who had come in realized that this was the system that was going to apply to them. At what point they knew or should have known those factors, I'm arguing that that would be a different factual scenario than is present here.
So let's talk about specifically the education code, because I know that there's arguments about whether the administrative code does or does not apply. But
right.
I don't think anybody's arguing the education code doesn't apply. And about getting at least once a year during the school year being appraised.
I think that's an excellent question. And from a legal standpoint, that those that who are not used to dealing with school districts kind of on a day-to-day practical basis, that does create some confusion. But as the Ortizes know, and we know because we've been dealing with teacher appraisals, and as she even actually acknowledged in her grievance, the appraisal contemplated under 21.352 is the summative annual appraisal. It has been called the summative annual appraisals through the time of PDOS and now as TTES is being implemented. And that summative annual appraisal, if you look in the context of the education code in 21.352C, you can see that is what they're looking at. For example, one of the most important ways to look at it is at how they define an appraiser. A person who conducts an appraiser can be the campus administrator or, if necessary, someone whose job description includes classroom observation responsibilities. Because the summative annual appraisal goes in and you have an extended observation of the classroom instruction, as maybe you experience when your students or your children experience, where somebody comes in and looks through a lesson cycle of what the teacher does. Then they use that extended observation and artifacts through the school year, such as timeliness to being on time to campus, whether you followed policies, and then you create what is the summative annual appraisal. And those are actually done under the domain set for in the teacher evaluation rubric, which is Exhibit 4 that I presented to you. And if you look, there.
So are you arguing that the performance of teacher students is not part of that appraisal?
It's absolutely part of that appraisal. It is absolutely part of that appraisal because the performance of teacher students has never been defined. And most schools, in fact, most schools don't use standardized tests or other district assessments and actually incorporate that into their summative annual appraisal, even under T-tests. It's not defined, so they look at different factors. And in our summative annual appraisal, there are multiple domains and indicators that actually look at the performance of teacher students as they relate to instructional techniques, including domains 1.4, 2.2, 2.4.
I'm going to stop you because now I'm going to just declare my ignorance. You've gone into somewhere where I don't know. So let's slow down a little bit.
Okay.
And I'm looking from big picture. What I heard them argue was, you know, and under the law, I know that 1 and 2 are required, 21351.
Right.
I heard them say the performance of teacher students, whatever that is, was not done within the year. Is it your position that it was done? And if so, I'm hearing two different things. How was it done?
The summative annual appraisal and how it's under 21.352 for considering the performance of teacher students is part of the summative annual appraisal. For example, throughout the school year, teachers receive 10 spot observations and then a summative appraisal. And they're looking at key instructional techniques and how the students respond to those techniques. And to make sure the instruction is data-driven, they're checking for understanding. They're doing assessments related to individualized assessments relating to that during the school year. And that is all evaluated under the domain and rubric that's used on the summative annual appraisal that's conducted by the end of the school year. Dallas ISD has done something that only one other school district in Texas has done, and they have. Houston ISD did this before Dallas ISD. It's no longer in place. They used what was the EVOS system. That challenge actually went to the Commissioner of Education under Houston Federation of Teachers prior to this opinion. And the commissioner denied that request on the merits. And Houston ISD actually used student achievement, but these arguments were not made in that particular case regarding the end of the year. But Houston ISD and Dallas ISD are the first two school districts, to my knowledge, that have used what is some people refer to as a value-added measure. Dallas ISD refers to it as relative performance. And that's where you have to get state assessments, which do not come out until the summer, because students who are trying to make up or matriculate or graduate and need certain passing rates do take makeup tests in the summer. In fact, right now students are taking STAR tests this week, kind of coincidentally. But those results don't come back to the school district until the end of the summer. And if you're using a value-added model, a school district has to actually look at how those scores relate to their student population, and in Dallas ISD's case, they do a target distribution, which is the reason that extra component that's not required under the education code. It's something that the district has added and something that's being touted as a possibility to encourage other districts to do throughout the state. It's just an added component. Most school districts under T-test, they get to define how they are going to do student growth. Most of them do what's called an SLO, or a student learning objective. Dallas ISD also does an SLO that is completed during every school year, so it's completed during the 2014-2015 school year, and the teachers actually received their score on the SLO, which is student performance, during the 2014-2015 school year. So all components of a teacher evaluation system, the appraisal required under 21.352, were completed during the 2014-2015 school year. Beyond that, at the latest, and I would just note, if they don't have their appraisal at the end of the school year, under any factual circumstance, that would trigger the need for a grievance under DGBA
local. At that point in time.
At that point.
10 days after the end of the school year.
Yes.
What about the document that they received? I mean, that clearly they grieved about something within 10 days of receiving it.
They received the scorecard, and it was not an assessment of their classroom teaching performance. What it was is, so everything with respect to the teacher performance component had already been completed. All that went to the teacher performance component was math. Whatever their score was, where they fell under in a category, so for a category A teacher, because there's four teaching categories based on content level and student population. If you were a category A teacher, you got 50% of your score was for your summative. So if you got a 80 on your summative, you got 40 points. So for the teacher performance category, all that was there was math. For the student perceptions component, they had already received their student surveys to know what percentage, you know, they what the students scored, how they had done, and what percentage they got. Between that summer, all that was done was a target distribution and math, and they received their final points earned based on that target distribution. It was just math.
Could you repeat that sentence again?
The only thing that was done, you know, that appeared that was new on the scorecard, which was the final points earned, which was based on the target distribution, to understand what that 80%, if they got 80% positive student surveys, what that resulted in points-wise on the scorecard. With respect to the student achievement component, all teachers do a student learning objective. And that was done during the 2014-2015 school year. Once again, they got their score both for the goal setting for that student learning objective in the fall, and they got a goal accomplishment in the spring. So they had their, for student achievement, which is based on student learning objective, school star, and then if applicable, an individual template of student achievement. They already had their SLO score. With respect to school star, which is on everyone's, that comes out in the summer, and it's a small percentage of every teacher's overall grade. With respect to the individualized templates, they don't apply to all the teachers, but if an individualized template means that you actually have either district assessments, state or national assessments, and sufficient students to be able to look and see if there has been student growth. And the teachers actually receive most of the results of their district assessments during the 2014-2015 school year, so they know how their students did on those assessments, and they usually get bar charts that show how they compared just generally within their school and within their feeder pattern and the district. Then in the summer, all of the star tests come in, and the district conducts a target distribution to give them the final point total. So everything regarding the student achievement component occurs during the 2014-2015 school year. Dallas ISD simply doesn't have the data to be able to conduct a target distribution to do the type of relative performance or relative growth analysis to be able to score this. And I would note that if you follow NEA Dallas's argument regarding the interpretation of 21.352C, student achievement through standardized state measures would be unlawful, period. And that can't be the law. That can't be what was envisioned, because right now the legislature is talking about doing that without revision to 21.352C. But their interpretation would mean that using these type of more value-added measures or looking how a teacher is effective with respect to student growth would be unlawful under 21.352C.
So let me ask
because of the timing?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. So let me ask my question. Under TEI, when is a teacher appraisal complete? What is the date that we're using for them to be able to complain about their appraisal?
If the complaint is about their appraisal, which Dallas ISD has always alleged is their summative annual appraisal. That is what is the appraisal defined by 21.352. It's 10 district business days for when they knew or should have known of the results of their appraisal. So it's 10 district business days from when they received the score on the summative annual appraisal.
Okay. Are you aware of any evidence that the teachers were told not to file a grievance in the spring and to wait till the scorecard?
There is no evidence of that in the record. That was, as they said, that was argument of a counsel, which argument of counsel in a grievance does not constitute evidence.
And my last question to you is as to the notice that the teachers had of the policy and of TEI, what is the evidence of when they had notice I understand that there's, it was on the website. I understand that the, at least the guidelines, the first guidelines, which we can argue about whether they were in effect or not since they were revolving. I think that the second amended guidelines in March.
March.
What notice do we have in evidence of when these teachers had notice or should have had notice other than, well, they could have gone to the website?
There are several things. In the spring of 2014, there were informational sessions provided to the teachers regarding the Teacher Excellence Initiative and what they were asking the board to adopt. Those spring informational sessions are in the record. I don't have the actual record site for you at this time, but that was before it was ever adopted. They were said, this is what we're going to be doing, assuming the board adopts this, for the next school year. Then the guidebook was circulated and the board did adopt it on May 22nd. And the website, which is specific to TEI, it's a really great website. It keeps, you know, becoming even more technologically astute, was fully operational on June 1st, 2014, and that was a portal. At the very, very latest that they knew TEI was going to apply to them, they received a 1.5-day training at the beginning of the 2014-2015 school year during the teacher in-service. That's in the record, in the evaluation calendar, the dates, the checklist, that's all in the record. They received a 1.5-day training, one day on all of the components of the evaluation system, as well as a half a day where they went over to the student learning objective and they went over SchoolNet. And SchoolNet was the internet technology that notified the teachers of everything that occurred with respect to their TEI evaluation. So if they had a spot observation, the principal would, or their appraiser would input it into the system and then SchoolNet would shoot them an email. So before they even began their first day of instruction on the 2014-2015 school year, they knew this was the policy of the district and this was the teacher evaluation system that would apply to them for the 2014-2015 school year.
Thank you.
I'm not sure how much time you have left. Okay. Good luck.
May it please the court. Commissioner asks that you affirm his decision dismissing the case. You've heard about a few of the different filters, mostly focusing on timeliness. We'd like to turn your attention briefly to some of the other filters the court could use through which the teacher's claims must pass. In our outline, we've provided to you a number of them, but I'd like to start with 7057 of the Texas Education Code. It states a teacher may appeal a school district's violation of the school laws of this state. If you go through their complaints in the First Amendment petition before the commissioner, you see on pages 2 and 3 summarized there that those complaints do not involve a violation of the school laws of this state. They say, you know, this student learning objective is unduly vague and uncertain. They assert another one is impossible to understand. They assert the survey was used unfairly and arbitrarily. These are not violations of the school laws of the state that the commissioner had jurisdiction to consider. And so he properly dismissed those claims. If you move over to another filter this court can consider, it is failure to state a claim upon which relief can be granted. I believe, Justice Triana, you already picked up, and the other side has already said, this is the district's adopted appraisal system, their own system. It's not the commissioner's recommended system. So particularly for all the administrative rules they cite for violations of the school laws of the state, those rules don't apply to this system. That is not—
Can I ask you, other than to point to the new T-test in which it specifically says that Chapter 150 doesn't apply, what do you base that argument on?
It's based upon the same way you'd construe a statute to be constitutional if you can. You'd have to construe these rules to be, legal if you can. And those rules, the commissioner does not have authority to dictate to local school districts how to run their own system under those statutes, 21.351 and 352. Commissioner only has authority to adopt his own recommended system, and then 21.351 spells out what's required for the district system if they adopt their own policy.
But so, what as to those claims that the district's policy is contrary to the state law? What about those?
Now, those claims, I believe you're bringing up 21.352. See, they're 8 different parts of that, but the part the court seems to be considered with is the timeliness aspect. Our argument is that that statute is directory, and for precise, I mean, there are four factors the Texas Supreme Court has said you need to consider. The plain meaning, that one seems to go against us. It says must each school year. But the remaining three factors are all in our favor. There's no penalty for noncompliance. The purpose of the statute is to get evaluations done. It doesn't make sense to nullify late ones. And third, and last, the consequences. You brought up, Justice Goodwin, that what is the real harm to getting a late application? We think that's precisely the point for why this statute is directory. Maybe you got it a little bit outside the school year, but you're not harmed by that. You got the evaluation. So that's our point on that one. Some of the other claims about 352C, they fail you to set forth facts that are sufficient to allege the violation. So they say, you know, we get to put a rebuttal in our file. Well, nobody was denied the right to put the rebuttal in their file that complained about character limit. So those types of things. And then last, if you get through those three filters, which avoid the problem of Solis entirely, then you get to the exceptions in the proposal for decision. So those are alternative ways to approach this instead of the timeliness aspect. But again, there are a number of filters through which the court needs to consider these claims.
Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court. As an initial matter, I'd like to address counsel's assertion that if you accept our arguments, then no school district in this state will be able to use standardized assessments in assessing teacher performance, and that is not the case. You see in the district's exhibits that they have had that information within the contract year. 21.352 not only requires that teachers be appraised annually, but also that any evaluation be shared with the teacher promptly. And there can be no argument that having information in June but waiting until September of the following school year to share that information with the teacher in writing is prompt. Turning to the argument about new teachers and whether they could grieve this system, this is the exact problem. Teachers cannot file grievances because Angela Davis's case at the commissioner was untimely. This is a big problem. There's no dispute on the timing of the scorecard. Even if you look at substantial evidence at the findings of fact, there is no dispute that we filed this within 10 days. And as you noted, Justice Goodwin, we received something. And we filed this grievance within 10 days of receiving that document. If you take a careful look at Dallas's exhibits 2 and 3 that they filed yesterday, one sets forth the teacher performance rubric. That is not student performance. Look at all the domains. Look at the verbs used. Just analyze that. That is not student performance. It says right at the top in large font, teacher performance. And then turn to the scorecard example that's in there. And you will see in large font, student achievement. That is the student performance component of this evaluation, and that is delivered to the teachers in the scorecards for the first time.
What about back to the point that if you didn't have the what is it, the summative?
Correct. They call the summative, the teacher performance component.
Within 10 days of the end of the school year. And, well...
Receiving the scorecard triggered something.
Okay.
And for us to receive an appraisal, that, especially one that would inform us that we are not meeting the district's expectations after it's too late for us to resign, after all that time that could have been used for development, not only for this teacher, but also for the students in the district, for all that time to have been wasted for the district withholding information that they've had since June is not prompt. So it nonetheless violates the law. And was triggered by receiving the scorecards. I want to address the point that argument is not counsel. We said that Diane Birdwell, one of our 80-some teachers, was told, and there were others as well, but Diane Birdwell is an example, that she was told not to file a grievance. She was told in the 2014-2015 school year, don't file a grievance, wait until next year, it's not final yet. That was argued by us. Why? Because we had about 20 to 30 minutes to argue the claims of 80 teachers. We've submitted a written exhibit in the grievance process. It's our Exhibit A. And what we did there was to outline each one of the teachers and their individual concerns. And in there, you'll see that Ms. Birdwell notes that she was told do not file a grievance because it's not final. The guidebook is not notice of anything. What guidebook is, the same way this court held in Bridgeport, ISD versus Williams, is contingencies. The guidebook on its face says this will be updated. This is for discussion purposes only. Just like the regulations in Bridgeport ISD, it was not final. And this court held that in administrative matters, courts should not entangle in non-concrete injuries, which is all we had until we received that scorecard. The 21352 claims get through those commissioner filters. If they were not addressed in the exceptions, it is because they were not addressed in the proposed decision. There was no disagreement to note because the commissioner didn't even rule on it. Those are clear violations of law over which the commissioner has jurisdiction under 7057 and is bound by that statute to exercise. And in fact, because he has telegraphed his intent to merely affirm the board's vote, ignoring our request for independent order, we believe that this court can conduct the statutory interpretation and render on the merits.
What basis are y'all able to claim for that independent order? I meant to ask about that earlier.
In the relief requested, we ask for a reversal of the board vote and also declaration that the scorecards are void, that the system in that it violates the law is void.
So in that respect, it's not that's not what's being brought under via an appeal.
That's correct. Okay. Right. Just like Dr. Solis probably had not seen her pleadings, but said, I asked you to reverse the board decision, and I also asked you to find that their actions in failing me to provide me proper non-renewal notice violated the law. And this court held that she need not have had a board vote on that first issue, the second issue, in order to get the commissioner to rule on it. And so in the same way we've asked him to reverse the board decision, we've also asked him for an independent declaration as to the violations of law alleged.
Does he have the authority to enter like a UDJA independent order? I mean, what basis does he have to do that?
The commissioner makes decisions on violations of law all the time, especially in appraisal grievances like this one. Odie Parker v. Dallas ISD is one of our cases where there was an error in the appraisal, and the commissioner notes, you know, that was an error on the district's part, and in that case he said you need to place this decision in the file alongside the appraisal so that anyone who looks at that appraisal in the future can note that at least part of it was affected by error of law. Thank you very
Thank
much.
You. Thank you. Thank you for fine argument. And with that, the case will be submitted and the court is adjourned for the day.